All right, let's get started this morning. So if you want to take your books, if you have them, and really today we're going to just spend time discussing the lesson, going over, if you just mentioned, if you have questions that you want to bring up. The other thing that we asked in the beginning, Pastor Dave asked, was just that you would, even as we're teaching through this lesson or as we taught through it now, if you have feedback for us, things that maybe we didn't answer that you thought should be a part of that, or some of these things, maybe we raised more questions than we gave answers. And so if you have feedback even on the lesson, improvements, things that you thought of, we'd appreciate that as well, hopefully. So any thoughts from you this morning? Put you on the spot right away, wake you up, get you going.
I'll put you in. No.
Go ahead.
No, I just had a, right in the very beginning, we have the purpose of the Sunrise Bible Church.
Okay.
And it says the purpose of this church will be the advancement of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And I'm not disagreeing or anything with that. But we didn't really define the kingdom of Jesus Christ in this dispensation. What is the kingdom of Christ that we're advancing?
Okay, so, go ahead.
The second page, it talks about the millennial kingdom. We know what that looks like, purging the judgment, the restoration of all things, the putting down of all authority. And then we even see the eternal kingdom, which is when Jesus gives that kingdom to the Father, and then the Father comes down, and God is all and in all. And so I can see the advancement. I mean, those are sort of easy to see the advancement of those type of kingdoms. But I was just wondering what your definition of this, the kingdom of Jesus Christ in this dispensation. So.
Sure. Yeah. So, Pastor, he's asking for the purpose statement in the beginning, the advancement of the kingdom of Jesus Christ, the purpose of the church shall be the advancement.
So I might be better on that one to speak.
Yeah,
because
that's what I was wondering, if you wanted to address that.
This comes straight from our church statement of faith and constitution. So,
and the reason, I'm just going to say one of the reasons I'm asking is a lot of people have a different idea of what this is. This, are we supposed to restructure all society now?
Yeah.
Are we to bring in the kingdom? And there's so many ideas in this statement is thrown out. You listen to Christian radio, it's constantly thrown out. We're advancing the kingdom of Jesus Christ. What does that mean? And especially if that's our main purpose, we should have a definition.
So the reason I'm saying I should answer this one is because actually when Pastor Greg wrote this lesson, that was not the purpose statement he had in it. I encouraged him to put it in because that's literally comes straight out of what our Constitution and Statement of Faith says. As I told him, and I'll tell you now, if I were king for a day, I would actually redo that purpose statement. For the very reason you're bringing it up, I think it's an unclear thing. I'm not king, and that would require some changes, and maybe sometime we can do that.
So what would the king statement say?
The king statement would talk about essentially the purpose of Sunrise Bible Church is to bring glory to God. This is off the top of my head here now, so I better phrase it. Bring glory to God through the gathering of the saints and the right preaching of the word and the right ministry of the ordinances in accordance with the local church, something along those lines. So the issue with the millennial, with the kingdom, is that it is a fuzzy term today, and it does mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I think both you and I would have a pretty similar agreement on what we would see as the kingdom, which would be, we're talking about, properly speaking, the kingdom in the way that we would see it as twofold. One would be that there's the general rule of God upon the earth. It's okay to say that God has a sense, an authority, a sovereignty over all things, but that there's also a future literal reign of God in Jesus Christ on the earth, and that kingdom is not yet here. So that would be a nutshell, I think. Mm-hmm. Would you add in?
So you would say the primary goal of the church would be to, you said, glorify, gather together, worship,
edify one another.
What about Christ's command to go and baptize everybody else, the nations?
Yeah, I mean, that would include the edification of the saints, the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry, which would be a subset of that.
Primary focus of the church.
You had a really good statement. I remember. I didn't mind it. Do you remember what it was?
I don't remember off the top of my head exactly the exact wording. But really, we looked at, you know, there's a couple passages. You look at the Matthew 28 passage. You look at the Acts 2:42 passage, I believe it is. But, you know, where it's the church will continue, you know, that Acts 2:42 talks about the church continuing in the apostles' doctrine, the breaking of bread, the fellowship of the saints. You know, Matthew 28 talks about the evangelism, the baptism, and you know, really, you look at those commissions, and we glorify God best when we fulfill the commission that He's given to us as a local entity, as a church. And so, you know, when we think through that, as we think through that purpose statement, really that purpose statement should be and really derived from those specific commands. And so the original one was along those lines of glorifying God. And really there was four parts. It was through the preaching of the word, through fellowship. I'm trying to remember those four parts. Evangelism. And
making disciples,
I think, was so. There was four parts to that original purpose statement, but it was along that line. So again, that's not word for word, but it brings up an interesting point, and it brings up a discussion that Pastor and I had when we first started looking at this.
I mean, scriptures talk about the mystery kingdom, which is that which was never foretold by the prophets or told to the prophets. So they didn't understand this period between death upon the cross and the coming kingdom. And it, you know, talks about that as not being a theocracy, but more of an individual or basically sort of speaking of the church. So there is, in a sense, the kingdom. You know, there's a mystery. We should not all sleep. All these, I think there's like 12 of those type of mysteries that were not given back then. So there is a sense of kingdom, but it's not like the one coming, and so I didn't know if we...
Yeah, so part of the issue here is Pastor Greg and myself were not kings. So we submit to one another just as, in unique ways, just as you submit to one another and to pastoral authority. One of the ways that we submit is this church has agreed upon certain truths that govern itself and declare what we are. So I think I can operate within a framework of that purpose statement, but that may not be exactly how, if we were kings, that we would write it. So I appreciate it. I think it could be strengthened. I've talked about over the years with our deacons and also even mentioned a few times publicly, I think there's some areas in our church statement of faith and constitution that probably eventually should be updated and revised. But that's not, you know, to me, that's not the end of the world. So we were just trying to be honest and not say, hey, here's the purpose statement of Sunrise Bible Church, when in fact that's not what we agreed upon as a church. So that's an aspect of our submission as well. So, because we're not kings. I think I'd make a good one, but you know.
So maybe in one of these sessions, maybe in one of these sessions, you know, 6 week or whatever, we could talk about the mystery kingdom. What are the mysteries? What are those things that prophets never saw or were never told and that are true now? That's just an idea. So.
Yeah, and one of the things you'll find continually evolving over time is anytime you make a purpose statement or you write things out, make declarations, language is constantly evolving, language is constantly changing, and how it's used. And so even the word kingdom, that might have been a lot clearer in its distinctions at the time that the purpose statement was written than it is now, because of some of the confusion and questions that come in that surround it. And so it's not that it was a bad statement or is a bad statement in the scope of our understanding of it, but there it does leave room for question. It does. So
this needs to be defined. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing whatsoever.
Sure, right. No, but you do bring up a good point. And
we had probably an hour discussion on this, just that paragraph when we were putting this together. So this is not a foreign discussion to us. So duly noted. Maybe we'll add some definitional wording to that. So
okay. Good. Any others?
Questions, things that you would say, boy, we really could have added this. This would be helpful for new members. Yeah.
I came in late, so I don't know if we discuss this, but back on Article 4, or Article 5 membership, I just had a question on let's see, I think it's this one. Oh, it's Section 2, Duties of Members.
Are you looking in the Constitution, Joe, or were you looking?
Are you going anywhere in this book, or just the last part?
You can ask. Yeah, you can. I was just curious where you're at, so I'd get the same spot.
Yeah, so there's not page numbers, but it's...
Okay, under the
Article 5 membership.
Okay.
And I don't want to be funny, but the Section 2, which is on the left side, the right column, Duties of Members. So there's a statement there that if you come to a place where you disagree with the doctrines within the church, that you quietly disappear. Which, when I said I didn't want to be funny, but I am. But anyway, it sounds like a prenuptial agreement. See? So the question I have is just a couple. Is let's see, where do I want to go with this? I was thinking you're teaching on Luther. So if he had this agreement, how would he have handled his theses and his whole approach, or what would he have done? In other words, his goal was not to separate himself. It was more to be biblical and to understand scriptures and to implement them. And so when you have issues in the church, how do you handle them? In other words, the church already has clear direction how to deal with discipline when there's issues, whether it's doctrinal or moral or whatever. So this statement just seems to me not uncomfortable, but uneasy. In other words, there are in place already how to deal with situations like this, and if someone is, quote, has a wicked heart, you can't, what if they agree to this, they won't keep it anyway. So my question is...
But I think one of the things that may help that is to remember the tenor of this. If there's somebody who's teaching rank heresy, there's one way to deal with that. That's a discipline matter. But here I'll say something that's uncomfortable for me and then kick in whatever you wish. Let's imagine that somebody within our congregation came to a genuine belief that the proper thing to do for their children is to sprinkle them. Now, is sprinkling babies rank heresy in and of itself? You should all shake your head no. Now, that is a serious difference. Now, if you think that sprinkling your baby will actually make them, you know, a part of God's family in the sense of regenerate them, that's rank heresy. But there are millions of brothers and sisters who, that's not what they believe about sprinkling babies. They, some would say, like the Lutheran view, that is, they receive that by faith and they prove that as they grow up. Others is, this is just showing a mark of entrance into the covenant community that's confirmed as they make a personal profession later in life. That would be more the Reformed Presbyterian view of things. I think that's a serious error. We've clearly, in our statement of faith, articulated that that is not what we believe. We've positively put forward what we would do for believers' baptism. But there could be someone who comes to that belief. You know, if they've come to that, you don't want to have people leaving with a mic drop moment, right? They've got a guy who's teaching Sunday school. He's a lay person in the church. He's come to this belief. And so one day he just takes a whole Sunday school session and tries to convince everybody to start, you know, getting babies wet. And then mic drop and says, I'm out. Done with this church. That kind of thing would be inappropriate. So I would say that the way I've understood, this is pretty standard fare in most free church models of membership. We're not talking e-free, but free as in free to associate models of church membership. This is a pretty standard thing to say, look, the goal is not to disrupt the unity that exists in this church. And even just think about that, of the discussion we just had about that statement in our statement of faith, about the purpose statement. Even though I just admitted, and Pastor Greg has admitted, that isn't necessarily how we would word it, we care about the unity of the church so much so that we've chosen not to make big waves about that. And maybe someday, as leaders, we will encourage a change, but it will be very careful and slow. So whereas the person who's out the door and just like, you know, I'm going to leave a path of destruction behind me, I think that's what that text is, that passage is after. Anything?
Yeah, no, that's exactly where my thoughts went. This is the discussion we just had, and I think really it's a protection against and recognizing the authority of the body that the word gives the body. You know, the body is the one who puts together and decides. So if you're not sure where he's at, he's in the Constitution, the documents of the church earlier. He's not in the actual lesson that we went through. So if you're trying to find where we're talking about. But, you know, with that being said, again, recognizing that authority of congregational body, the body, in the sense of we vote as a body on those things, we put those things together. And so for the sake of the unity of the body and the discord, if this is what the church has decided, and it has in those doctrinal statements, if I come to a place where I say, okay, I did agree with this, but I can no longer agree with it for whatever reason, there's specific areas that I can't agree with this, then rather than sowing discord in the body or sowing disunity, the right thing for me to do is to say it's time for me to look for something else. You know, instead of pronouncing or teaching or pushing my teaching that would be against what the church has already decided where they stand doctrinally. Now, that doesn't mean that I can't meet with the pastor, or I can't, you know, and talk about, okay, this is what I'm thinking. I've come to this conclusion through whatever means, reading, things I've heard, things I've done, and say, okay, you know, can you just help me walk through this? Can you help me understand? Because I'm seeing a difference between the conclusion that I came to and what we're saying as a church, and could you help me walk through this? And you know, that's an important conversation to have. I hope somebody's not just going to walk. But at the same time, when it comes to that point where we decide or where we see that there's definitely doctrinal differences, we're going different directions, which that will push, then for the sake of the body and for the unity of the body, it would be wise for me to move and do something different. Yes.
One of the problems with the Constitution, which we have talked about as deacons and which we probably need to, you know, look at, is what Joe was saying there. There's a deal where if you're going to leave the church on less than good terms, there is no provision in the Constitution for you to leave quietly. In other words, you can't, if you got a beef and you write a letter and say, I want to withdraw my membership, we still have to vote, which brings up a motion and a second and a discussion about the whole deal. Okay, there is no way, if you want to leave the church on good terms, let's say you move somewhere else, you can do a letter of transfer from one church to another. That's quietly. But if somebody's on bad terms and they want to leave the church and they just write a letter saying, I'm out of here, I don't like this, there's no provision in the Constitution for them to leave quietly. It has to go before the church and there has to be a 2/3 vote of the people at the meeting, et cetera, et cetera. So that might be one thing we need to look at.
And having said that, there have been good examples of people that have left churches like ours, including ours here over the years. I'm thinking of an individual who came to a very different view in terms of eschatology than us. I had long discussions with this individual. They weren't antagonistic or painful because I love this person dearly. But they came to the conclusion, this isn't where I'm going, and I'm just getting frustrated and I don't want to cause a problem here. So I'd like to, write a letter to the church and tell you we're going to be going to a different church, and we don't want to cause waves. Now that still hurts, right? Because we love people dearly, but they didn't blow things up on the way out. And those are two different things. So that goes to I care about the church. And think about this like at a pastoral term. I mean, I've known pastors who have left churches dropping big bombs behind them, as they go. This can happen to church members, the pastors, where it's like you're not trying to care for the church. You're just hurt, mad, irritated, on a doctrinal war path. There's ways you can leave gently, and there's ways that you can say, let me hurt people out the way out the door. So that's what that passage is really about.
Also, I think it's important to understand that there are differences that we need to separate over or put some distance between us, and there are differences that we don't, okay? So within our body, within the context of our body, if you and I are having a conversation and we say, well, that's not exactly how I would word it or say it, it doesn't mean, well, I'm going to leave the church because so-and-so says it differently than I would say it. Just as a personal example, I wasn't here very long at preaching through Ephesians chapter 1, and several people talked to me that they, not how they would word it, okay, as I finished preaching through that text. Now, those weren't bad conversations. They weren't conversations that were antagonistic. They weren't conversations that, well, I'm mad at you and you're mad at me. They're not conversations that, if that's the way you're going to teach that text, then I can't come to church here. So I guess what I'm saying is understand in the context of the conversation, too, there are things that you're going to have nuances of differences, and that's okay. That's the Christian liberty of us coming to that and flushing through that. But they hopefully are leading to good conversations. Now, there are certain things that do lead to, and Pastor mentioned a couple of them and gave examples, and I won't belabor the point, but that a point to where, okay, then there is grounds for separation or grounds for moving or grounds for doing something different. But I just don't want to leave you with the impression from this discussion that that's something that you know, happens every time we have a little nuance of difference in how we think or how we would interpret something or look at something either. Or, you know, so there it's hopefully it's edifying and leading to good discussion and building, as long as we are resolved to come back to the Word as the final authority, and that's where our discussions lead us to.
Right, I think the Word is the basis. Just two other thoughts. One is, when I read this section, it sounds like a legal contract, meaning, you know, like if it ever came to the courts in an issue where the church and this person or whatever, in other words, the church has a written form that says this is the guideline, so how to deal with it. But anyway, that's, I mean, how it seems to be worded. But anyway, the other, I had a discussion this last week with someone about divorced people in the church. And the issue was, if someone has repented and they're remarried, and you accept them as membership in the membership, my position was different than this other person. His position was that this is not the unpardonable sin. Well, I don't even think it has anything to do with unpardonable sin, but the point is, can that person be in leadership in the church? Was the issue that we were discussing, see, and how you deal with it. And my point was, when David sinned with Bathsheba and killing Uriah, there was consequences. There was war throughout his whole life. He couldn't build a temple, and there was other family problems. And like when Saul disobeyed and offered sacrifice when he was told not to, there was consequences. The kingdom was taken from him. And so there's always consequences, even though we restore people to fellowship and we don't, quote, treat them as second-class members, but... So that was kind of the issue of, you know, how you handle nuances that come up in a church where people, you know, like in this issue of...
Well, I think part of the answer to that is goes back to history even of our church. When we in 2000 and... When did we change the statement of faith and the...
Definition of marriage.
Definition of marriage thing. Was it 13? 13 or 14. So that's a while ago. You know, we changed two things. We changed, we voted as a church body to change our church covenant to the statement, I think it reads, we engage therefore by the aid of the Holy Spirit to uphold the holy institution of marriage as set forth, or between one man and one woman as set forth in the scriptures. I think that was the phrase. You can look at it and correct me. And then we also put an expanded section in our statement of faith about marriage and human sexuality. And you can read that. I think it's Article 13. Is it in there? In the statement of faith. But when we, even in doing that, we crafted that statement in such a way as to actually make it pretty broad, to actually not answer that question. And part of the reason we do that is for the sake of the unity of the body, is that we didn't have, and we still do not have, unity on that question. Pastorally, I know how I lead, but that's another example of even as a pastor submitting to the whole of the church. And so I would say that that's actually a very much open question at Sunrise Bible Church. That's where we fight as pastors to try to preserve unity, even amidst disagreement, wherever possible. My own personal view, I don't think divorced men can be pastors. I also would probably argue the same thing for deacons, but there are a host of other ministry things that people who have gone through the pain of divorce can definitely be leaders in.
Without really, you know, going through the whole Constitution, you know, going back to your original question, Joe, I think really one of the things for us to think about and remember, and even as we went through the lesson, the Sunday school lesson, I would tie this back to recognizing that when you join a local church, the importance of reading through those statements, the importance of reading through the Constitution, the church covenant, and I know for a fact here, when you join the church here, the doctrinal statement as well, I know for a fact that you're asked, you know, have you read through these things, and do you agree with them? There's a reason for that question. There's a reason that that's asked, and it's not just so that we can, you know, some people say, well, that's just the church wanting to put their thumb on you, and no, that's not it at all. It's for the unity of the body as we move forward and function as a ministry, that there is a unity of mindset there, and that's really even what this clause leads back to in the original question. The discussion that we're having is, you know, if there comes a point in time where you cannot answer that question yes, then there's some discussions that need to be had, and based on those discussions, maybe even some decisions that need to be made. And I guess that's personally where I would leave that at. But it does lead back to that, you know, that church congregation, that authority. So, I mean, you have congregational authority and rule, and you have pastoral authority and rule, and both of those are present in the body, and each have their place. But, you know, when it comes to that constitution, looking at and recognizing that this, as a church, this is what we've decided, and this is how we will govern and rule, and this is what we believe, and this is how we'll move forward. And now, again, looking at clarifying statements and things like that, we don't have the authority to do that. We can't just change those statements and say, well, this is how I would word it. That comes back to the congregation, and it's talked through and it's worked through, and if they decide to do that, then that's what we do. But, you know, again, I think it's just important for us, and these questions even lead for us to understand that there is that governing body within the congregation, and that's what leads to these things being in there and those questions being asked even when you join. So,
as pastors, I would say we're thankful for that too.
Yes.
Because that is a good gift from the Lord, that both the official statements, but also an understanding of the membership of the church and what they think and believe. It's a good gift from the Lord that prevents us from running rogue, you know, getting on our own hobby horses and running a direction we want to go. Because we think all the time about, you know, there's 94 members. Actually, that's not correct. It should be 93. So we just dropped Renee and Crystal, and we added Alyssa. So I forgot to put that in the bulletin too. Welcome, by the way. So make sure we do that today, officially welcome her. All right.
And she was asked that question. So
Yeah. You know, though we think all the time about the unity of the body and what the understanding is here now, and we're not trying to run too far ahead of that or drag it to pieces. It's constant. So,
well, I just in that thought, I remember a long time ago I taught on the millennial kingdom, a visible, literal, earthly kingdom of Christ, and so forth. And some people never heard of it, and they go, "Can you teach that?" And I go, "You agreed with that. It's right here in our statement of faith. The very thing I'm saying, you agreed with when you joined this church." And it's always a good thing to be able to come back to something like this. And I'm not just off in some weed someplace. So, anyways, but they didn't realize that they had really agreed to that, and maybe they have forgotten about those things. So, but I think it's important to have that basic statement of faith there for those reasons.
Sure.
Other questions about the lessons? We actually want feedback from you, things that you felt like weren't clear, could be added. Remember, this is an introductory thing, so, but we welcome them.
I like having a book like this. It's nice just to have it and be able to go through as you're going through it and have an outline like that.
Yeah, our thoughts on that were just trying to put something together that looked nice, that as people are coming, looking at the church, wanting to talk about membership at the church, that you can hand them something tangible they can read through and look through. And to have these discussions with them. So appreciate that.
Fire away.
I was thinking, just to add to one thought of the purpose of the church, that I don't know was emphasized, but maybe I missed it, was Peter says, we've given up all to follow you, and what do we get in return? And Jesus reiterates, you know, not just heaven, but now family. So that whole concept of family, was that covered?
A little bit.
Yeah. In other words, and Jesus in another place, you know, says, who is this brothers have brothers and mother outside thinking he's a little loony and wanting him out of there. And he says, who is my mother? Who are my brother and my sisters? And he's giving a big picture of God's kingdom and family.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that in a local church.
Family is referenced in there, in the lesson, I believe.
Yeah. Can't remember which page, but I know we talked about it. So,
so are you going to kind of, you have a couple other things you're doing. Are you going to still do the same kind of format for the upcoming lessons?
So as far as the book, you mean? Or
yeah, or so how you, and I missed a lot of this, so I apologize for that. But so when I was here, a lot of times, you know, you would get into discussions, mm-hmm. and then at the end, you'd be kind of rushing through the last part. And so I guess my question is, are you going to kind of do that same format? And maybe to think about, maybe we have to move it to the next week. I know you used to do that to finish up so that you didn't feel like you're pushing through and that discussion time that people had, you know, didn't happen. Does that?
Yeah. So, a couple of thoughts to that. One is, by the nature of this lesson, we had talked about really trying to keep this on within that parameter that we had set, the 6 weeks. Part of it is we recognize that for the majority of people who are hearing this lesson are already members, and so, but we thought it would be profitable for us as a church to walk through this for a couple of reasons. One is it's a good reminder. And to walk through it again, and maybe even to help somebody in an area that they didn't grab or understand. and then another thing is so that you understand as a body, when we meet with someone for membership from this point forward, this is what we'll be using. So you know what someone's being taught. If you have the opportunity to have discussion with them about the church, about membership, you can even reference back to the membership class or whatever, but at least you as a body, as a congregation, have an understanding this is what we're teaching people who are coming for membership. So to answer that question, we are trying to, this lesson, we talked about that a lot during the week, just that I thought it went well, but I felt really rushed at the end. I just had to, you know, just kind of pound through. And so some of the discussion that we had was just, that's kind of the nature of this particular lesson and wanting to keep that on track. So hopefully in the future, and even part of it is the amount of information that we're putting in and trying to, you know, so it's that constant, you know, 1 week you have a lot of discussion and you don't get through your information, and the next week you don't have a lot of discussion, now you have, and so it's that balance of even writing the lessons and putting that together. The goal is, during this time, is to have the discussion. The goal is, we want that. We want the interaction back and forth, and the questions to be asked, the points to be brought up. That really is the purpose and the point, is walking through this together. So that format we would like to keep. Hopefully we won't feel as rushed in the future as we finish those.
The other thing to remember, too, is that, you know, this will, when we teach this to new members as well, we'll probably actually have more time than we do now, because legitimately we're only getting about 38 minutes here, you know, if we actually stayed on time, which I don't think either of us did in all six lessons. so that we'll probably have more time, more like an hour per lesson. It'll also be a smaller group of people where the questions will probably be more limited, and we're able to tailor that to whoever is in front of you. So if you've got four people want to join, they were members at such and such church for 25 years, they've moved into this area, you know, they're well schooled in the Bible, they clearly understand who we are, you know, these lessons will go through very quickly because they're going to, but maybe you've got, oh, this is a fairly new believer, only been saved a year, now just wants to get baptized and join our church. Yeah, it might take a little longer. So yeah. That'll change. Here, to echo what Pastor Greg said, is we're just trying to pound through it. And the other thing, too, I would add is we're dealing with a lot of things on doctrine of the church, preaching, discipleship. We actually have whole classes that will touch on some of these things in a much more extended way. So we're anticipating that in the future, too. So.
Yeah. One other thing that I would add, too, is that, you know, since we are congregationally ruled, we could change and not feel so rushed the amount of time we have for Sunday school. Just throw that out. So, but anyway, so...
Start good. At 8:30. Sounds good.
Appreciate the discussion. Appreciate the questions. Again, if you have anything that you want to bring up or mention to us, feel free to come and talk to us. If you have feedback about the lessons, we'd love to hear from you. So, okay, dismissed.